You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty, it is Tuesday, January 20th, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I hope you had a good Martin Luther King Jr. Day holiday, and I hope you enjoyed the football games on Sunday. Man, I'm so excited about the Green Bay Packers going to the Super Bowl. I was watching the game, they're just blowing the Seahawks out. Holding them scoreless throughout the first half. I think I got some touchdown in the third quarter. I had to tune out about 4 minutes left in the game with the Packers up 19-7. So I'm sure that they held on to that game and they went ahead. What's this? The chat room. Oh, something happened. Yeah, the Packers got an interception and then the Seahawks got another touchdown with 2 minutes to go. Oh, that's fine. I'm sure the Packers, you know, they would have had to onside kick at that point. So I'm sure the Packers recovered the onside kick and What the Packers blocking full of a tight end instead of blocking tried to get the onside kick. It bounced off of his hands and the Seahawks got it. Well, that's okay. I'm sure with just, you know, less than 2 minutes to go and only one timeout that there's no way they scored They scored the go ahead touchdown. Well, that means they'd have been up 20-19. So yeah, all they got to do is defend the 2-point conversion. And then Aaron Rodgers would get the ball back, drive bound for a field goal to win. And what's that? They had him at a 15 yard sack, but he heaved up a Hail Mary that was caught for the 2-point conversion, putting him up by three. Well, okay, but I'm sure with a minute to go, Aaron Rodgers got the ball back and drove down the field and they got the tying field goal to go into overtime, right? Right? Oh, yeah. See? And then, you know, right there in overtime, all they got to do is get the ball back and get that touchdown. And the coin flip went to Seattle? Oh, okay. That's all right. Well, all they got to do is defend. It's overtime, right? See, if you hold them to a field goal, you get the ball. What's that? They threw their third pass, was a 35-yard touchdown pass to the guy that the Seahawks had thrown at four times previously. And each one of those four times, it was an interception, but the fifth time was the game-winning touchdown. Right, you guys are pulling my leg. Come on, I didn't smoke that much weed. All right, well, let's get on with the show today. Plenty to talk about in the world of marijuana. On today's show, our interview is going to be a little bit of Cannabusiness Chronicles. We've got Kenny Morrison. He's the CEO of the Venice Cookie Company. He'll be joining us to talk about the wide world of marijuana edibles. And then in the Radical Rant today, at the end of the show, there's a quote from a friend of mine, Sharon Ravert. She's the executive director of Peachtree Normal in Atlanta, Georgia, where she said, y'all are just afraid of the word high. And that got me to thinking about the word high and how it scares so many of our legislators out there. So we'll talk about that in the Radical Rant. Also on the show today, we're going to do some drug war data mining. I've been putting together a whole bunch of geographic data for the state of Oregon in my new role as the executive director of Portland Normal. I want to share some maps with you that give you an idea of what the political struggles are here with marijuana legalization in the Beaver State. Also on the show, speaking of the Beaver State and the other states that have legalized marijuana, what does that mean about drug-sniffing dogs now? Are drug-sniffing canines worth a damn now that we've got marijuana legalization in four states? We'll talk about the legal ramifications of probable cause and search and seizure. But of course, we start everything off with the 420 Radio News. In the headlines today, the governor of Wyoming is weighing in on Nebraska and Oklahoma's lawsuits against Colorado's legalization. The patient registry for Michigan declined for the second year in a row. There's a new survey out in Indiana on marijuana legalization. We got some more details on that Ohio marijuana cartel idea and some insiders gaming the rules on Florida's medical marijuana regulations. All that coming up in hour one, and then stay tuned for hour two. Toker Talk Radio will take your calls and cover more stories of the day, and maybe somebody can give me the real lowdown on what happened in that Packers Seahawks game. I think I'm gonna have to smoke a lot of marijuana this next couple of weeks. Stick around, we're right back after this.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, your ticket to the Boston Freedom Rally. This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today.
Fun.
Oh, hello, I'm Big Daddy, and I want you to join me at the Funky Roller Ring. We're partying hard over here, baby, so stop on by. Check out the funky grooves and shake your booty, too.
Don't get in a too deep, brother. Don't get in a too heavy. Don't get so you can move a bottle whenever you get ready.
Sir, do you think there will or should come a time for us to discuss the possibility of legalization, regulation, and control of all drugs, thereby doing away with the violent criminal market as well as a major source of funding for international terrorism? Thank you so much for your time, Mr. President.
Well, I think this is an entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Name the time and place, Mr. President. Radical Russ has been prepping for this debate full-time since 2005. The Russ Belville Show.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, January 20th, 2015. Governor Matt Mead believes Wyomingites are likely purchasing marijuana in Colorado and taking it home, and he blames the federal government, he said Friday. Mead said the attorney general studied the lawsuit Oklahoma and Nebraska filed in December against Colorado, but decided it wasn't the best way to proceed strategically, saying, quote, "I'm a states' rights guy, and I believe in that. My position, if we could get there, wouldn't be to sue the state of Colorado. It would be to sue the federal government," end quote. Mead said he was frustrated that the U.S. Department of Justice was ignoring portions of the law by allowing Colorado's legalization experiment, saying, quote, "In effect, you are changing the law, and that should be an act of Congress and not an act of an individual man," end quote, he said. Mead acknowledged that Colorado may be sweeping in tens of millions in revenue thanks to the taxes on marijuana. The number of patients in Michigan's medical marijuana program declined for the second year in a row in 2014, according to the state statistics reviewed by the Detroit News. Last year, the number of identification cards for patients in the program totaled 96,408, according to the Michigan Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs. That compares with 119,470 patients in 2011 and 118,368 in 2013. Officials with the Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs said the agency does not speculate on why the number of patients is down. Morgan Fox, a spokesman for the Marijuana Policy Project, said it's not clear what's behind the decline, saying, quote, "The number of patients in Michigan has been fluctuating, and it's tough to say if there is a direct cause," end quote. Fox said many reasons may be driving the trend. A big one is probably that patients don't feel the state law protects them from prosecution, he said. The fifth annual Hoosier survey, conducted in 2012 by Ball State University, found that 53% of Hoosiers supported decriminalizing marijuana by making it legal to possess small quantities. The 2013 Hoosier survey found that 52% of Hoosiers supported making marijuana a regulated substance, much like alcohol and tobacco, and that 78% of Hoosiers believed that marijuana should be taxed like cigarettes. but don't expect those findings to result in action by the Indiana General Assembly this year. Democrats in Indiana are more supportive of regulating marijuana like alcohol and tobacco, 64%, while Republicans are evenly divided, 59% or 49% in favor, 51% opposed. Regardless, the Speaker of the Indiana House assigned a limited marijuana bill to the Rules and Legislative Procedures Committee, also known as the Graveyard. Senator Sue Arrington, a Democrat of Muncie, who sponsored the medical marijuana bill, said, quote, "Bills that go there usually don't come back out," end quote. The Responsible Ohio Political Action Group has finally released some details of their proposed constitutional amendment, which will require over 300,000 signatures to place on the 2016 ballot. The group has been criticized for its proposal to implement an anti-competitive 10-grower marijuana cartel as marijuana is legalized. The amendment proposes that the Marijuana Control Commission will oversee the manufacturing, selling, distributing, and taxing of marijuana, that marijuana will be grown at only 10 sites in Ohio to ensure the product is tightly regulated and tested for safety and potency. These sites must be at least 1,000 feet from a school, public library, church, or licensed daycare. Marijuana will be taxed at 15%. Medical marijuana will be sold at a wholesale price to patients with a doctor's recommendation, and 85% of the tax revenue will go to municipalities, townships, and counties. Florida's rules for medical marijuana will be crafted in part by a 12-member panel that includes 9 members in a position to make money from the law. The 12 make up a committee formed to help the Florida Department of Health determine how to select, license, and regulate Florida companies to grow non-euphoric cannabis, make a medicinal oil from it, and sell it to patients. The law, approved last year, allows patients with intractable epilepsy and several other medical disabilities to use the cannabis oil, but the department's efforts to write regulations bogged down in legal challenges from growers, court rulings, and bureaucracy. So the committee was announced to negotiate rules the growers could accept. 5 of the 12 seats on the panel go to growers, and the other 4 are to people representing companies in the cannabis industry. This has been your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, January 20th, 2015. I'm Russ Belville.
420 Radio, freeing your mind 24 hours a day. International Cannabis Business Conference is coming to the Hyatt Regency Hotel in San Francisco, California, February 15th and 16th, 2015. Don't miss this exclusive opportunity to hear from the experts on the future of marijuana commerce, including scientists like Dr. Carl Hart, Dr. Amanda Ryman, and Dr. Stanton Peel, policy experts like Ethan Nadelman from Drug Policy Alliance, Anthony Johnson from Oregon's Legalization Campaign, travel author Rick Steves from Washington's Legalization Campaign, and California legalization pioneer Dale Sky Jones. Business experts like Harborside's Steve D'Angelo, ArcView Group's Troy Dayton, and UFCW union leader Dan Rush. Cannabis journalists like Ricardo Baca, Steve Bloom, and Doug Fine, and California Republican Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, plus many, many more. Tickets are on sale now at internationalcbc.com, but hurry, last year's conference in Portland, Oregon was a sellout. International Cannabis Business Conference, San Francisco, California, February 15th and 16th, internationalcbc.com.
NORML stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks are far less.
The Green Cross has been an amazing source of cannabis medicines for my pain management. Whether I need edibles or tinctures or topicals, I'm able to combine the 2 or 3 to give me really successful pain control.
It's the delivery service that Green Cross provides is just incredible. You get your medicine and it's delivered by a person that you know you trust.
Whether we come to you or you come to us, the Green Cross delivers.
Welcome back, everyone. 14 after the hour, and today in Behind the Headlines, we take a look at an article from Jacob Sullum of Reason Magazine. Does legalization make marijuana-detecting dogs obsolete? This is something we first reported on when Colorado and Washington legalized marijuana, and we started to wonder what good is a marijuana-sniffing dog. Throughout those campaigns and the campaigns in 2014, I reminded marijuana consumers throughout the country that regardless if we're legalizing an ounce, 8 ounces, or even a gram of marijuana for personal consumption, one of the biggest takeaways from marijuana legalization is ending the contraband nature of marijuana, specifically with respect to the probable cause generated by a drug-sniffing dog. Now, we've reported on drug-sniffing dogs many times. We've spoken to the experts in this field, and we've reviewed many of the studies, a famous study showing how much drug-sniffing dogs are alerting based on their owner's subconscious cues. We reported on a story where teams of dogs were run through 4 rooms. A room could have either a red card indicating that contraband was present, or the room could have tennis balls and sausages, something dogs would like, or the room could have both of those things, or the room could have neither of those things. Those were the 4 combinations. And they found overwhelmingly the rooms that had the red cards in them, where the owner would think there were drugs in that room, had many, many more alerts than the rooms that did not have red cards. So we know that the drug dog owners can get them to alert based on their subconscious or even conscious cues. And we found that the reliability of drug sniffing dogs is well below what we would consider to be constitutional when it comes to accuracy. When a drug sniffing dog is ran around the outside of a car, it is about 60% accurate. That is about 40% of the time they find no drugs in that car. And they're far less accurate once the dog is run around the inside of a car. Dogs will alert 2 out of 3 times when no drugs are actually found. But of course, the purpose of the drug dog alert is not necessarily to find drugs. It's the key that unlocks the 4th and 5th Amendment protections that people have against unreasonable seizures. Now, Jacob Sullivan writes about this and explains how a drug dog is trained to smell a substance and upon that either scratch, bark, or sit down, you know, make some sort of alert. But a dog is a binary object when it comes to those sorts of determinations. It can either detect it or not. It can't tell you which drug it has detected, nor can it tell you how much of that drug can be detected. Now, that used to not matter because any amount of marijuana, even a single speck of marijuana, was enough to indicate someone was breaking the law. Possession of any amount was completely illegal. But now, in Colorado, Washington, Oregon, and Alaska, where you're going to be allowed to carry around 1 ounce of marijuana on your person, that dog alerting for marijuana is no longer a probable cause to indicate any crime has taken place. And furthermore, that alert for marijuana, if the suspect might be carrying other drugs, that could lead to those other drugs being dismissed as evidence illegally gained by the dog. For example, suppose you're carrying 1 ounce of marijuana and 1/4 ounce of mushrooms, and the drug dog alerts, the cops detect, get those substances, your bag of weed, your bag of mushrooms, and the bag of weed's legal, but the mushrooms are still Schedule I, and they take you to court over that. A good defense lawyer will be able to get that thrown out of court because the evidence of the mushrooms is what they call the fruit of the poisonous tree. The fruit of the poison tree. The idea that you cannot use any of the evidence that you gain from an illegal search. And when that dog alerted, there's no way to tell the dog was alerting to mushrooms that are illegal versus weed that is legal. So that's where we're at right now, constitutionally speaking. Now, the drug dog sniffs themselves are not a search. There's been cases at the Supreme Court that have decided this, that all that a drug dog sniff does is reveal the presence of contraband. It doesn't tell anything else about you. It doesn't tell your social security number, doesn't show you naked. It's not a search in the typical sense because the only thing it can detect is crime, not anything personal. But now that marijuana possession is no longer a crime, that search is no longer a probable cause. In Washington and in Seattle, the Washington State Patrol and the Seattle Police Department soon began retiring their drug dogs who had been trained for marijuana because it's almost impossible to retrain a dog to not sniff something that it's already been trained to sniff. It can be done, but it's very expensive, and getting a new dog is about the same expense. About $15,000 it costs in training, in time and resources to be able to get those dogs to the level that they need to be. So I believe what we're going to see through legalization in this country, especially up here in the Pacific Northwest, is an end to marijuana sniffing dogs. Now, they might have some limited use being able to sniff marijuana on minors. That's, you know, minors can't possess marijuana. That's still illegal. Being able to use dogs to run through schools for searches because those are all minors. Maybe there might be those limited uses. But folks, the era of the pot sniffing dope dog is coming to an end.
Well, excuse me!
All right, folks, happy 420. It's 420 in the Mountain Time Zone, home of the Denver Broncos. And you might recall in 1987, the Denver Broncos came back with an improbable comeback win, known in Denver as the Drive, to win the AFC Championship. 2 weeks later, they were getting blown out in the Super Bowl, 37-20 by the Giants. Go, Pats, go. Be back right after this.
420 Radio, your ticket to Seattle Hemp Fest. Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
Connect with 420radio.org through social media, on Twitter at 420radio.org, and our Facebook page at 420radio.org. Follow us and like us today. You'll be glad you did.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Welcome back, everyone. 22 and a half after the hour, and as you know, I have taken on a new hat. I am now the executive director of Portland NORML, the Portland, Oregon chapter of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Been speaking to some reporters and putting out some infographics on our Portland NORML Facebook page. And I just wanted to share some of this information with you, some very interesting data points to be gathered, taking a look at the state of Oregon. It's important to understand that Oregon is a very divided state. We're pretty much the I-5 corridor, which is where you find all our major cities, Portland, Salem, Eugene, Roseburg, Medford, all from north to south. And then a great eastern expanse that might as well belong to Idaho. It's very similar to Idaho politically, religiously, conservative folks, farmers, ranchers, and so forth. And that's where all the no votes for marijuana legalization came in. So we're pretty evenly divided on the Cascade Mountains. And a lot of what you'll see here in these maps we're about to display will kind of make that clear. So with Portland NORML, I thought the first thing that might be interesting to know is, how much did Portland support marijuana legalization? Statewide, marijuana legalization passed in Oregon with about 56% of the vote, the greatest support in a statewide marijuana legalization initiative thus far. But when you take it to the Portland metro area, which is mostly Multnomah County and the downtown core, you'll find a much greater support within Portland itself. In central Portland, right there, that big 90% you see there, it's actually 89.9%. I rounded up on that. But there is your support in Portland, Oregon for marijuana legalization. And the central downtown core, if you can kind of see the faint words Portland there with the 84% below it, that's the downtown. That's where all the skyscrapers are. That's your main downtown area. And radiating out in roughly a circle from that is support for marijuana legalization above 80%. Amazing that most of the downtown, most of the commercial areas of Portland, Oregon, support for marijuana legalization ranges from 80 to 90%. As we get to the most of the residential areas, both on the left side of the map, which is to the west of the Willamette River, more into the hills and the more conservative suburby areas, we still see support for legalization in the 70% range. On the eastern side of town, in the 70% range. Now, there's a major freeway that bisects it, and you'll see that's Interstate 205. To the left of that, the 70% ranges. To the right of that is where we start to see the 60 and 50% ranges. These are poorer and more immigrant areas of Portland, Vietnamese immigrants, Thai immigrants, and Eastern European immigrants with lower support for marijuana legalization. Having this sort of information is important as we move forward and start to lobby and talk to our legislators and the public about this. For example, some legislators just have no idea that the proposals they are putting forth in Salem are completely impractical. And the most impractical of them would be House Bill 2040 and 2041, which proposes a 1 mile exclusionary zone from schools for pot shops. You could not have a pot shop within a mile of a school. Now, you know, most of these places, it's like 1,000 feet of a school. He's proposing a mile. Now, I have just, in the center of this map, given you the location of Lincoln High School in downtown Portland. Just 1 mile around just this one school would exclude marijuana commerce from all of the downtown Portland area. And if you add every single school, as you'll see on the next map, it would be impossible to have a pot shop anywhere where there aren't basically any people. Now, another proposal has to do with the more typical barrier of 1,000 feet away from a school. This is a map that's produced by the state of Oregon that helps dispensary owners in the current medical marijuana dispensary business locate their where they can set up shop. The dark purple spots are the footprints of schools in Portland, Oregon. The pink that surrounds each of those dark purple spots is the 1,000-foot buffer from that school area. So you can't set up shop anywhere where those pink kind of circles are. And then the green circles, the bright green circles, are where medical marijuana dispensaries are currently located. And if those remain medical only, they all have to be 1,000 feet away from each other. And it's likely that pot shops would have to be 1,000 feet away from them. So as you can see, there would be virtually no place in Portland, Oregon, to start establishing marijuana pot shops for adults. And wherever they do get set up will end up being farthest away from the people in red light districts, if you will. Speaking of marijuana patients, we do now have some information from the state. This is a map, a density map of patients in the state of Oregon. This is from 2012. As you can see, mostly concentrated around Portland, Salem, Eugene, and then south in Medford, you see a huge number of patients where that area really doesn't have that much population. That has only grown in 2014. So the area in southern Oregon, those cities down there have about a tenth as much population as what you find in that northern corner in the Portland area, and yet about the same number of patients. And of course, Oregon can register a patient from anywhere in the country. This is a look at every medical marijuana patient with an Oregon card.
420 Radio, your ticket to the High Times Cannabis Cups. Are you a hypocrite? If you live a closeted cannabis lifestyle, you are. Read about 7 people living a closeted cannabis lifestyle who are on the verge of coming out in The Hypocrites by Mara K. Eaton. Available at areyouahypocrite.net. You can purchase the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, also available on iTunes. Check out Mara K. Eaton on Facebook as well. Learn more at areyouahypocrite.net. growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Mark Twain once said that when there's a gold rush, it's a good time to be in the pick and shovel business. Today, we look at the rapidly evolving markets in the marijuana green rush in our Canna Business Chronicles. Welcome back, everyone. 30 after the hour, and joining us today on the telephone, we're hooking up with Kenny Morrison. He's the CEO of the Venice Cookie Company out of Venice, California, a purveyor of fine medicated edibles. Having a little difficulty reaching him on the line at the moment. Let's see if we can get him there. Kenny, are you on there? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, thank you so much for picking up. We were scrambling there, having some difficulty with the Skype line, but we're glad we got you here. You are the CEO of the Venice Cookie Company. Tell us a little bit about your company and products.
Venice Cookie Company, we started in 2008. We make about 37 different cannabis-activated food products, ranging from not-so-virgin olive oil, that was actually the first product we started with, to cookies. We're called the Venice Cookie Company, but it's almost a misnomer, because out of the 37 different products we make, two or three are cookies.
Oh, okay.
We're best known for our chocolate bars, which is a brand called the 420 Bar. And we also make a line of beverages called Cannabis Quenchers.
All right. So, Kenny, I'm interested in your business model here and how excited you guys have to be about this recent change at the federal level, you know, effectively ending Department of Justice interference in medical marijuana in the states that have legalized it. Tell us your reaction to that that Cromnibus bill and that passage of that amendment.
Well, I wouldn't call it effectively ending yet. I think it ends it on paper, but whether or not it actually ends up ending it in practice remains to be seen. Everyone thought that the Obama administration took a more favorable stance towards cannabis use for medical use for patients. And outwardly, Obama's administration did take a more favorable stance than the Bush administration, but that actually seemed to amount in the Department of Justice or the DEA feeling the need to push back a little harder and rebel against, you know, the sentiment of the president. So I try and keep a level head and you know, I live in Los Angeles. I was a Laker fan for a bunch of years. Rest in peace to my Lakers, but you know, Phil Jackson as a coach, he never got too excited when the good things went down, and he never got too disappointed when the bad things went down. And I try and just kind of maintain sort of a level-headed perspective on what all of these new policy changes mean, because you know, it's one thing for it to be written on paper. It's another thing for it to be executed in the way that we'd all like it to be executed.
Yeah. And, well, currently we've got the U.S. Congress is completely in Republican hands, Senate and House. But bills still have to be signed by the president. President Obama still got 2 years left. Is it your fear that in 2016 there might be a complete takeover by the Republican Party that would roll back these provisions of the spending bill?
I don't spend too much time worrying about things I can't control. I got all sorts of fears, but, you know, most of the things I end up worrying about don't happen.
Yeah.
And that probably just means I worry a lot. But heck, right now I'm worried about half your listeners turning off the radio station because I just said I'm a Laker fan. You're up in Portland, right?
That's okay. We're global at this point. I'm sure our fans in Japan could care less. So thank you so much about that, though. We're having a good year for the Blazers. Not so bad. Let's talk about the edibles business, because this is something that's been going on in Colorado and California and a lot of the other medical states for over a decade now. But it's become a little more high profile now that there's marijuana legalization in Colorado, and particularly when a certain New York Times columnist blasts about her tripping out on the cookie, so to speak, it gets kind of it's been given kind of a black eye in the media. What would you like to see as far as the development of the edibles industry for potency, purity, consistency, and maybe the media portrayals of it?
I have no problem with how the media portrays edibles. There's concerns with edibles, just like there's concerns with everything else. And we need to be able to learn from our mistakes. And if there's, bud tenders out there who are giving marine doubt incomplete information, we need to take that on the chin and be willing to learn from our mistakes. So, I mean, I tell people all the time, there's not much I can do with compliments. When I give people my food products, my cannabis edibles, and they go, oh, wow, thanks, that was great. That doesn't make me a better company. That kind of builds up my self-esteem and makes me feel good. But if I'm on the path to being as good as I possibly can be, I need to welcome myself more to the criticism than I do need to pat myself on the back for the positive things people tell me. So she's absolutely right. We have an issue where a lot of bud tenders out there, have an extremely high tolerance to cannabis, and they're imparting what works for them on newbie novices who haven't tried cannabis in 30 years and assuming that they have the same tolerance. I don't use the word dose on any of my packaging because a dose is a very personal thing. And everyone has to know what works for them. So really what that whole Marine Dowd calamity resulted in was a wave of edible education. And I think for that, I'm grateful. And that's great for the cannabis industry at large, and it's great for, the edible industry, is for people to get more educated on what works for them.
Do you feel education alone will help this situation, or should there be regulatory changes to back it up?
I mean, there's always going to be, there's always going to be a bureaucracy making rules. And I feel like for the most part in Colorado and Washington, everyone's trying their best. Up in Washington, my sister company up there, Evergreen Herbal, which makes the 420 bar and cannabis quencher, the local regulatory framework is that the people have been great to work with. They've been really receptive. They want to get this right. They've been willing to take our advice from time to time, and we've been willing to implement some of their programs from time to time. And we say, hey, this doesn't work, or this does work, and it's a give and take. But I think a byproduct of any bureaucracy that's trying to legalize something new is there's going to be some bad ideas that get put into practice. And if I've chosen to be one of the guinea pigs in the industry, I just got to be ready to deal with that.
We're speaking with Kenny Morrison. He's the CEO of the Venice Cookie Company. You can find him online at thevenicecookiecompany.com, on Twitter at Venice Cookie Co. And Kenny, another aspect of the edibles industry that comes into play is something we hear at the show called WOTC, What About the Children? And the portrayal in the media and among some people's perception of edibles is that the industry is marketing these things to children because they're tasty gummy bears or sodas or chocolates. What's your reaction to this, and how do we market these products to ensure that they are for adults?
Well, what about the old ladies? Don't old ladies like gummy bears and sweets too? I remember my grandmother used to love her sweet treats more than anybody in my family. But no, it's a serious issue. We have to, we have to make sure the messages we're sending to our children are practical ones and smart ones. I think it's really important that we send honest messages to our children. And I understand a lot of people don't want their kids getting into cannabis edibles and stuff like that. I'd feel the exact same way if I had a child. I'm about to get married. I'm about to be a parent in the next year or two. But I think the big thing is, if I had a teenage child who was to experiment with something, that is, you know, looking to have a, you know, an experimentation with a cannabis product, I'd be more concerned about the harms of that child ending up in prison for their experimentation than I would be about them having some sort of toxic reaction to trying a cannabis edible.
We also found a concern in Colorado around the consistency of labeling with cannabis items. For example, something labeled 100 milligrams of THC, where one batch is 10 and another batch is 160. What do you do at Venice Cookie Company to ensure consistency and quality in your product lines?
I was in Nevada at the, we test all our products, first of all. We test all of every batch of oil to understand the potency of that batch of oil. So when we divide it up amongst the food products, we have the proper amount of THC or other cannabinoids in every single unit that we produce. Out in Nevada at the recent cannabis convention, geez, the name of it's escaping me at the moment. You know, one of the big problems is cannabis laboratories at this point are kind of like thumbprints. No two are alike. And they each have different methodologies for how they test for cannabis. And each food product itself needs a completely different process done to it in order to figure out how much THC is in it. For instance, finding 50 milligrams of THC in a lozenge the size of a Jolly Rancher is not very difficult. Finding 50 milligrams of THC in 16 ounces of a beverage can be very difficult. It's kind of like finding a needle in a haystack. Mm. And when these laboratories are charging you $100 or $200 to do a test, it's sometimes not worth them calibrating their machine for half a day to get that one test done. Most laboratories are set up to test THC potency in flours and concentrates, not necessarily a wide variety of food products. So again, there's a learning curve for all involved that the testing laboratories have a way to go, and they need to start sharing information with each other and having more of an open source way of testing the products and sharing their testing methodology with fellow labs, so there can be more standardization within the industry.
Well put. Kenny Morrison, the CEO of the Venice Cookie Company, want to thank you for joining us here on the Russ Belville Show. Some really wise words from someone who's right there in the industry in Venice, California. Thanks so much.
Hey, well, thank you. I hope I sounded somewhat smart. You have a good one.
You sure did. Have yourself a great day. All right, coming up next, folks, we got the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. We'll follow it up with a radical rant. Stick around. Are y'all afraid of the word high? We'll tell you why you shouldn't be when we come back.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, turning red states and blue states green.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs. We've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
In the
the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
The marijuana can mess you up.
Right. We've been getting high for what? 15 years? Nothing's ever happened. Did I get into all the drugs and start mugging people? Nah. Didn't do anything. In fact, I'd say I'm exactly the same as when I smoked my first joint.
Eddie, did you even look for a job today?
No, Ma.
Marijuana can make nothing happen to you, too.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back, everyone. 46 after the hour, and today in the Radical Rant, we're once again talking about the public perception of marijuana and as we move forward, how people understand marijuana and those who use it. Oftentimes when I discuss marijuana policy and politics and culture, I refer back to the LGBT movement, the gay and lesbian movement, and their struggle for equality and civil rights in this country, because we do have some similarities in common. You know, smoking marijuana isn't so much like being black, for example. Being black is something that's pretty obvious to every observer. There's nothing you can hide. But being a marijuana smoker can be a bit like being gay in that you can closet yourself. You can hide your identity, your likes, your lifestyle, if you will, from the general public. Now, some people might have their suspicions. In the case of the gay and lesbian community, you know, some people will claim to have so-called gaydar and be able to identify or who they suspect might be gay based on mannerisms and vocal inflection and so forth. And likewise, this happens with the cannabis community. This happens with us marijuana smokers, where people will suspect that we might be marijuana smokers due to how much we laugh at a certain joke or the type of music we like or how long our hair might be. And in both respects, there's been a growing acceptance, especially by younger people, for gay and lesbian citizen rights and for marijuana use and marijuana users' rights. And I believe that has corresponded with coming out of the closet. As gay people came out of the closet and were more visible, you know, thinking back to Billy Crystal's character on Soap from the 70s, Jody, one of the first gay characters on mainstream television, to today, where you have shows like Modern Family that show, you know, gay married couples. It's just become no big deal to the younger generation, especially as they've become more and more accustomed to it, as they've seen more and more out and proud gay people and realized, hey, they're gay. So what? They still go to work. They still drive cars. They still pay taxes. They still have kids and care about them and vote. And they're conservatives and liberals and they're all over the place. They're no big deal. And I believe we're seeing a similar thing happen with marijuana use. As more and more people come out as marijuana smokers, it becomes easier and easier for people to recognize, especially young people to recognize, that marijuana use is no big deal. And aside from the marijuana use, we're all alike and we all deserve the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities. But there is a substantial difference
in the gay rights movement and in the marijuana rights movement. And that is, outing yourself as a gay person did not make you a criminal. Yeah, yes, you could lose your job. You could get fired. You could be kicked out of. I mean, there's all sorts of terrible things and injustices that gay people have suffered when they come out of the closet. There's not to diminish that. But police officers could not arrest you, not since Lawrence v. Texas, at least. Now, in the case of a marijuana smoker, we face those discriminations, kicked out of the, you know, fired, not hired, and so forth, with even greater legal support for those abuses. In the case of the gay folks, a lot of times it's just kind of culture and the way people are reacting, and there's not, you know, written in the law that you can legally do that. It's just not written that you can't, right? In our case for marijuana smokers, though, a lot of that stuff is specifically written because of who we are. And there are tests to determine who we are. Gay people peeing in a cup, that was never going to detect whether or not they're gay. But marijuana smokers peeing in a cup can get you that scarlet letter with just a few nanograms of metabolite. So where this leads to is this understanding and this recognition that the public has for what it is to be a marijuana smoker. And as it's been illegal for so long, that limited understanding of who a marijuana smoker was confined to the narrow constraints of what I call the iceberg of marijuana smoke. The iceberg is that the pot smokers at the top are above the waterline. Those are the pot smokers you see. Just like an iceberg, most of it is submerged below the waterline. But the ones you can see in that marijuana iceberg are your hippies and your tie-dyes and your iconoclasts and loners and self-made entrepreneurs and artists and musicians and all the people who could be out and proud or didn't give a shit about being out and proud, had nothing to lose if they were out and proud. And so the association in the public's mind of what marijuana smokers are wild-eyed and idealistic and paranoid and conspiracy theorist and the libertine rock and rollers and the far lefty liberal writers and so forth. The wild fringes of marijuana smokers. And to a public that doesn't smoke marijuana generally, maybe tried it in their youth, they've come to associate that fringiness with the marijuana, that those people must have been just regular, normal people like you and me, but then they smoked the wacky tobacco and look what it did to them. They got all tatted up. They got all kooky. They grew their hair long. They started talking about 9/11 truth or whatever the hell else they're talking about. Contrails, save the whales, whatever it might have been. And regardless of how right or wrong any of those positions may be, it can be identified with becoming fringy, becoming radical, becoming out of the ordinary. That it somehow substantially changed who these people were. And of course, that's a misunderstanding due to confirmation and selection bias. That's that 10% of the iceberg you saw were already that way. Those people already were kooky, iconoclastic, and strange, and weird, and all those other adjectives. And they smoke pot. Right? It's correlation is not causation in this case. And what they don't see is that 90% below the waterline, the plumbers, and the teachers, and the doctors, and the lawyers, and the construction workers, and all the other people who smoke pot, who are just average run-of-the-mill normal folks. They're on a bowling league. They go hunting with their friends. They work volunteer time at the library, whatever, just normal average American stuff. And when they smoke pot, they're still regular normal average American folks who still believe regular normal average American things. And what got me to thinking about this from this perspective was this simple quote from one of my favorite activists in the world, Sharon Raver, the executive director of Peachtree Normal, who's as nice Southern mom, conservative business lady as you could be. You know, right out of central casting. Someone who could go meet any Midwestern mom with a conservative background, and the two of them would be, you know, swapping tails over punch and pie, right? Just total down home person. And she was discussing how in Georgia, they've got an opportunity to move forward with something medical marijuana there. And yet it keeps getting bogged down over whether or not it should be one of those CBD only situations. We're only going to legalize one molecule in cannabis, just the one that doesn't get you high. Regardless of the fact that most of the people that get benefit from that CBD don't really get the full benefit till they add the THC. Not to mention the people for whom CBD is worthless and THC is highly medicinal. Forget that. The discussions whether or not it's just going to be CBD only or something broader than that. And she came up with what I would consider the quote of 2014 when it came to marijuana reform. And that was, y'all are just afraid of the word high. Y'all are just afraid of the word high. So succinctly sums up what this is truly about. The consideration here, the fear, is that if we allow cannabis medicines with THC in them to be used on the children, why, the children will get high. And what the hell does that mean? First of all, if you're a parent that's ever given your kid one of those dextromethorphan cough syrups, an antihistamine, or God forbid your kid's on Adderall or Ritalin right now, you got no room to talk about being worried about getting a kid high. If you've ever had to give your kid a painkiller from dental work or from hospitals or whatever, if you've ever taken your kid in for a laughing gas treatment with marijuana or with the dentist, excuse me, if you've ever done those situations, the rank hypocrisy you are exhibiting by worrying about marijuana's high is so great as to defy explanation. But see, that's not their concern. Medicines, in their mind, don't get kids high. They don't really think of that as high. High isn't a scientific designation. High cannot be measured. High is a cultural construct of thrill-seeking, recreational hedonists purposefully altering their mind and consciousness in dangerous ways. That's what high is. Now, what I just described very accurately describes drinking, alcohol overdose, purposefully altering your consciousness in a harmful way as to distort your perceptions and personality. That's alcohol to a T. But isn't it interesting that alcohol's never called getting high? You don't get high on alcohol. You drink alcohol and you might get drunk on alcohol. Isn't that amazing how powerful the construct of framing is when it comes to discussing our use of drugs and medicines and alcohol and so forth? That these legislators are willing to let children suffer, knowingly let children and adults suffer, not getting THC that has been shown to be effective for their conditions, for the fear of a word. For the fear of the word high, that it might get a kid high. When scientifically what high is called euphoria, a feeling of wellness, a good feeling, feeling good. How incredible is it in our society that the need to punish people for feeling good is so great? We will knowingly allow children to suffer from the fear of the word high. So for 2015, if you want to have a New Year's resolution, perhaps one of them would be never using the word high with respect to the effect you get from cannabis, from marijuana use. It's tough. It's going to be tough for me, but that's what I'm going to try. I'm going to get lifted. I might get euphoric. I might get relaxed. But from now on, I'm not going to get high anymore. That's all the time we got for Hour 1. Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned. Hour 2 is next. Toker Talk Radio. We'll take your calls at 971-533-7111. For everyone here at Roller J Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed.